hier kenn ich mich aus. Bei Icke und Det, da bin ich zu Haus. Wo die Wurst sich mit und ohne präsentiert und am 1. Mai die Fensterscheibe klirrt, wo das Ampelmännchen noch sein Hütchen trägt und des Lampenladens letzte Stunde schlägt. Zurückgeblieben nicht nur an der Bahn und der Mode ganz und gar nicht zugetan. Ach, die Hertha reißt das Ruder nicht mehr rum, aber dafür ist die Lanke wirklich krumm. Ja, das ist Berlin, auf verfluchtes Berlin. Ich mag dich, Berlin, auch wenn es manchmal schwer fällt. Hier fühle ich mich wohl, hier kenne ich mich aus. Bei Icke und Det, da bin ich zu Haus. Diese Stadt, in der das Brötchen Schrippe heißt und wo jeder Hund gerade auf dem Gehweg, na ihr wisst schon, wo Freundlichkeit ihr im Verborgenen blüht und man vieles auf den zweiten Blick erst sieht. Diese Stadt, sie ist so lieblich wie auch rau. Sie ist farbenfroh und gleichzeitig so grau. Mal ist sie Kätzchen, mal ist sie wildes Tier. Und gerade darum leb ich gerne hier. Ja, das ist Berlin, oh verfluchtes Berlin. Ich mag dich.
Evolving human potentials in an evolving world. I'm Alan Steinfeld, and I've been doing this program on television for the last 10 years, and now, finally, coming to radio is New Realities. And each week, I like to bring guests to this program who are evolving our consciousness, who are exploring new ideas how to become more conscious beings. This program presents issues and ideas that tend to look at how to get over our automatic behaviors and brainwashing and conditioning and take free reign of our body, mind, and spirit. This program is about achieving a more peaceful reality for a more peaceful planet. I'm continuously on the lookout for new ways in which we can enlarge our consciousness. We must not attempt to limit our slice of the world, but must expand and transform it. In the words of the great masters, let me tell you what this program is dedicated to. Alex Huxley said, "Our business is to wake up. We have to find ways in which to detect the whole of reality in the illusionary parts which our self-centered consciousness permits us to see." And John Stuart Mill said, "No great improvement in the lot of humankind is possible until a great change takes place in their mode of thinking." So this program's really about changing the way we think, changing the attitudes that we have about our life and about what we think reality is. Today, actually, is a very important landmark day. Today is the 60th anniversary of the Flying Saucer. It was in 1947, on July 24th, today, that Kenneth Arnold, who was a businessman flying a plane in Washington State near Mount Rainier, saw 9 saucer-like discs flying in front of the mountain. He saw that about 3 p.m. when he looked over as he was flying back home. He lived in Boise, Idaho. He was flying from Chehalis, which is near the coast of Washington, southwest of Olympia. He looked up at the mountain and he saw, and I'll read actually his statement, and because I think this is a really important time to honor the reality that there are UFOs, there are beings from other planets, they have been visiting Earth, there's hundreds of thousands of eyewitness reports, there's tens of thousands of photographs, there's probably thousands of videos. I mean, there is enough proof to show that, hey, there's something else going on out there. But it was Kenneth Arnold in 1947, June 24th, the anniversary today, which started the whole thing off when he said, look, there are the flying saucers. And I'll just tell you what he said. This is taken from an article that Kenneth Arnold wrote in the next couple of months after his sighting. And he says here, the following story of what I observed over the Cascade Mountains, as impossible as it may seem, is positively true. I never asked nor wanted any notoriety for any accidentally being in the right spot at the right time to observe what I did. I reported something that I knew that I know any pilot would have reported. I don't think in any way my observations are due to any sensitivity of my eyes or misjudgments other than what is considered normal to a pilot. Because after, of course, he reported this, many people said he was seeing things. So Kenneth Arnold continues. On Tuesday, June 24th, 1947, I had finished my work for the Central Air Service of Chehalis, Washington at about 2 p.m. I took off from the Chehalis, Washington airport with the intention of going to Yakima, Washington. He was on his way to Boise, but he went to Yakima. My trip was delayed for an hour to search for a large marine transport that supposedly went down near and around Mount Rainier. So he says the air was smooth that day. So he's flying in his plane. He just took off from Chehalis, Washington. It was a nice little small town in southern Washington. And this was a beautiful day for flying. So he says the air was smooth that day, and it was a real pleasure flying. As most pilots do, when the air is smooth and they're flying at a high altitude, I trimmed out my airline in the direction of Yakima, which was almost directly east of my position, and simply sat back and let my plane observe, and observing the sky and the terrain. The sky was clear as crystal. And then, he says, I had not flown more than 2 or 3 minutes on this course when a bright flash reflected on my plane. It startled me as I thought I was too close to some other aircraft. I looked everywhere in the sky and couldn't find where the reflection had come from until I looked to the left in the north of Mount Rainier, where I observed a chain of 9 peculiar-looking aircraft flying north to south at approximately 9,500 feet elevation and going seemingly in a definite direction of 107 degrees north to south. So he saw these ships, these saucers, over Mount Rainier, and they were heading south towards Mount Adams, which is about, I think it's probably about 50 miles, or maybe it's 150 miles from as the crow flies, between Mount Rainier, which is a beautiful mountain in Washington, to Mount Adams, which I think is at the Washington-Oregon border. Arnold continues, they were approaching Mount Rainier very rapidly, and I merely assumed they were jet planes. Anyhow, I discovered that this was where the reflection had come from, as 2 or 3 of them every few seconds would dip or change their course slightly, just enough for the sun to strike them at an angle that reflected brightly in my eyes. Let me just interrupt here and say that it was here that Kenneth Arnold coined the term flying saucer. He said these objects were flying as if they were saucers skipping along a lake, as if you threw like a saucer or a rock, and you see the way that rock skips across the surface of the lake. That's how these vehicles were flying. And that's when he said they were flying like saucers, like flying saucers. These objects, he says, were quite far away. I was unable for a few seconds to make out their shape or formation. But very shortly, they approached Mount Rainier, and I observed their outline against the snow quite plainly. I thought it was rather peculiar that I couldn't find their tails, the tails to the aircraft, but assumed they were some type of new jet, and I was determined to clock their speed. I remember distinctly looking at my clock, which was located on my instrument panel that read 1 minute to 3 p.m., as the first object of this formation passed the southern edge of Mount Rainier. I watched these objects with great interest, as I had never before observed airplanes flying so close to the mountaintops, flying directly south to southeast, down the hog's back of a mountain range. I would estimate their elevation could have varied 1,000 feet one way or another, but they were pretty much on the horizon to me, which would indicate they were near the same elevation. They flew as I frequently observed geese to fly, in a rather diagonal, line-like shape, as if they were linked together. They seemed to hold a definite direction, but swerved in and out of the high mountain peaks. But what kept bothering me as I watched them flip and flash in the sun right along their path was the fact that I couldn't make out their tails. There was no tail, he's saying. There's no airplane tail, which was normal. There was never a plane that did not have an airplane tail. And I was sure that any pilot would justify more than a second look at such a plane. I observed them quite plainly, and I estimated my distance from them, which was at a right angle. So he's flying east, and these planes are flying due south from north to east. So he's coming right there, right in front of him, right in his view. And I knew they must be very large to permit me to observe their shape at a distance. He was about 25 miles. And the more I observed these objects, the more upset I became, and I'm accustomed and familiar with most flying objects, whether I'm close to the ground or high in the altitude. I mean, so he knew his airplanes, and this is nothing like Kenneth Arnold had ever seen. I could safely assume that the chain-like effect of these sources were about 5 miles long. So from the first object to the ninth object in that line was about 5 miles. Even though 2 minutes seems like a very short time to one on the ground in the air, in 2 minutes a pilot can observe a great many things. And anything within that field of vision, probably within 50 or 60 times. I'm not sure what he means there. But when these objects were flying approximately straight and level, when these guys weren't dipping in and out, they were just a thin black line, and the only time I can get a judgment as to their side was when they flipped to their side. These objects were holding an almost constant elevation. They did not seem to be going up or down, such as would be the case of a rocket or artillery shell. I am convinced in my own mind that they were some type of airplane, even though they did not conform with many aspects of conventional types of planes that I know. I would have given almost anything that day to have had a movie camera with a telephoto lens, and from now on I will never be without one. So he observed them for 2 minutes. They flew south. They disappeared over Mount Rainier. And Kenneth Arnold says, when I landed in Yakima, Washington, I described what I had seen to my very good friend, Al Baxter, who was the general manager of the Central Airport Company. He listened patiently and was courteous, but in a joking way, he didn't believe me. But then Arnold takes off for his next destination. And when he lands there, he is swarmed by reporters who have gotten the story from Al Baxter, who said that he reported Kenneth Arnold seeing these flying saucer-shaped discs. So tonight's program is really dedicated to the flying saucer. to what are these things of discovery and what is our current history about them. What does it mean? Well, I just came back from a symposium that I helped organize, which was called The Culture of Contact. You can look that up on the internet, cultureofcontact.com. And this was 3 days of the way the UFO, the flying saucer, whatever you want to call them, have these alien crafts have influenced our culture. Have they influenced our art, our movies, our literature, how they've really have become part of our culture, basically. And so my first guest coming up in a few minutes is the publisher of UFO Magazine, Bill Burns, and he was very much responsible for the conference today in New York, Culture of Contact, 60 years of UFO interaction, and probably more. It's probably been way longer than 60 years, but it's been in the last 60 years that this phenomena has actually been in the public awareness. I mean, there was a huge flap of sightings in the late 1800s, early 1900s. It seems to go through waves. There were the Foo Fighters of World War One. They've been around. And we're right now sort of in another wave. There was the O'Hare Airport sighting, and that's actually on the February 2007 issue of UFO Magazine, which we'll be hearing more about soon. It's the O'Hare. There's an article that says the O'Hare incident, the UFO that will not go away. I also welcome phone calls about the subject. You can, if you're listening to W or BBSradio.com, you can look there on the website and just get the phone number to call in. And if you have any experiences of having been contacted, sightings, abductions, whatever, I'm interested in hearing this because I think that enough people you can't talk enough about the situation. I think the more people that talk about their contact situation, the more people that have come forward and say, hey, I saw something, the more other people will come forward and admit to seeing something else.
Hi, Alan. How are you?
Hey, Bill, thanks for being a guest.
My pleasure.
Yeah, how'd you like the conference? I was just telling people a little bit about the conference. What did you think about it today?
I thought it was a really good conference. I have to say that the one thing about UFO conferences, the ones that I've been to, is that by and large, a lot of the professional ones, really you see people who act like a bunch of college students or high school
students. Yeah, why is that?
They go from lecture to lecture because the speakers are going to kind of give them this great knowledge. And, of course, at this conference, one of the really, I think, most positive parts about it is that the people who attended here attended from the point of view of they all had this shared experience, which was this encounter with something beyond the edge of reality.
Right.
And so there was a shared experience at the core of this conference, as opposed to other places where, again, you might as well be going to hear a chemistry lecture or a history lecture.
Well, it's that very topic, because I call this show New Realities. It's that idea about being beyond the edge of reality that I really like to focus on. And it's not just the sightings. Yes, everyone knows they're out there. Pictures are everywhere. But what is it that is about the reality, that how we have to change our perceptions in order to integrate this phenomenon? Can you talk about that?
Well, sure. I mean, what you have are people, by and large, they get up, they go to work, they come home, they have dinner, they go to bed, right? They'll watch television.
Right.
Television is like the ultimate matrix, right? It tells you what reality is.
Exactly.
It tells you who are the good guys, right, Alan? Who are the good guys? Who are the bad guys? What you have to buy? How you're going to die, right? What you're going to get sick from? And then you have people like the I think, really fortunate people at this conference who look beyond that world, beyond the world of, if you're in Manhattan, getting on a subway, going to work, getting on a bus, going out of work. They're beyond that world.
Yeah.
Where they are is they look to a world where there are creatures that resemble us,
mm-hmm.
but really have the abilities that we have to exponential levels, right?
Right.
There are creatures for whom intuition and a certain kind of mentalic ability, a psychic ability, is part of their daily life. Not like us, we are part of a freak show if you have those kinds of abilities.
So what is it going to take for those people going to work, going unconscious? I mean, is it going to take disclosure, as Stephen Bassett and Stephen Greer say? I mean, what is it going to take those people that are living a limited life to wake up and say, you know, maybe there's something else going on here?
Well, that's a good point. Stephen Bassett and Stephen Greer are right. That's going to be a big event. When that happens, and the government says, you know what, we will not deny this, right?
Right.
However, my concern is that really it's not going to change much. My concern is it's not going to change much because people are simply going to integrate this into their daily lives. So they get up, they go to work, they watch television, there are UFOs. You see
right.
what I'm saying?
What would you expect to change? I mean, I would expect possibly the end of war to say, hey, we're one planet. Let's act as like an intelligent civilization.
That's what Ronald Reagan said, and that's what Reagan said it, Clinton said it, and Hillary Clinton said it. That what if we suddenly found ourselves as a planet amidst a group of other planets which have life? Suddenly, wouldn't all our differences disappear? And the answer is maybe yes, maybe no. I mean, the analogy that I'd like to use is the analogy of the European powers colonizing North and South America.
Right.
When the European powers, Spain and France and Holland and Great Britain, when they discovered and began colonizing the New World and realized there were people, there were whole gorgeous North America, our wonderful continent, when they saw that, rather than come together, they fought the colonial wars. So wouldn't we then be in a whole new series of colonial wars, only this time we're the Algonquin and we're the Seneca and we're the ones being colonized by other species?
Right, but I do think we're a little more evolved. I mean, even Al Gore said, look, you would 50, 60 years ago, you would never think that France and Germany would have the same monetary system, that there would be an economic union. I think there is some evolution on the part of our consciousness on Earth. I think we are making some slight progress.
I'd like to believe that what's happening to our planet would bring people together. And that's what I'm hoping, that the old line forces, the ones who are saying, oh no, it's not going to do anything, this is stupid, you're all wrong, they're just going to be dismissed. And I don't know who's right, but I do know that there is a certain kind of a level of consciousness where there are leaders and scientists saying that these are problems that supersede the concerns of any one country, that demand a greater level of cooperation.
Well, I want to ask you about something you said the other night on Coast to Coast, George Norrie's Coast to Coast. You were talking about Jacques Vallée, and I think this is what you said. You said that the government doesn't want us to know about ETs the ETs don't want to know us to know them, because if they did, we would have the same ability that they do to bend reality. Did you say something like that?
That's what this Navy commander,
which commander?
Told us. 10 years ago, he said that in the military, everybody knows, and of course we all heard at the conference, that Pickering talked about the briefing book, the SOM, the briefing book,
right,
for military pilots on encountering UFOs. So we all know that inside the military, it's a commonly held understanding,
right,
that there are flying saucers, that they're intelligently guided. What Hoover said was, that's not the surprise. The surprise was, and the danger that we were told about, was that these inhabitants, these pilots of these craft, weren't just visitors from another world. They were us.
They were us,
in some cases, from the future. They were us from different planets where we had been seeded thousands or millions of years, hundreds of thousands of years before Earth was seeded. So, therefore, they were more advanced. But they really were human.
They really had the same essence that we have.
Right. It's the whole issue of what's known as panspermia. They were Homo sapiens. They were human beings. Far advanced. Evolutionarily advanced, but they were human beings. And the issue was, we have the same psychokinetic and powers of intentionality, and psychic abilities that they had. And
now,
the government didn't want us to use them, and really were forcing us into this kind of matrix of not using our own abilities.
The government was forcing us into this, or the ETs were forcing us into it?
No, the government was. The ETs didn't care. It was the government that was doing it. That's why there was no disclosure.
Now, who said this? Who said this?
This is a gentleman, a naval commander by the name of George Hoover, H-O-O-V-E-R. He was in the Office of Naval Intelligence, and he was the person, he was the commander who investigated the Philadelphia experiment.
Uh-huh. Okay, so the Philadelphia experiment really did happen. There was I know it's a little sideline, but that was the truth. I mean, the Tesla devices made
There was an event at the Philadelphia Navy Yard involving the destroyer escort USS Eldridge. It was that event.
Right.
And officially, the story was that they were using these huge coils, electromagnetic coils, right? There was a winding inside the coil
coils,
to
right?
generate electricity. They were using these coils, and the Eldridge's hull was the winding being passed through the hull, the coils, to remove from the Eldridge the magnetic signature, so that the Eldridge hull and other ships, I mean, actually the Eldridge, wouldn't set off the Japanese mines that were in the water, in the home waters of Japan.
Okay,
and
so
what happened was the power in the coils was so intense that the heat fused two sailors to the deck and melted the superstructure.
Wait, so
the
ship did not travel through time and end up in Montauk or wherever, like the
no, that didn't happen. What happened was that the Eldridge, now a crippled vessel, then sailed, disappeared into the fog, and sailed down the intracoastal waterway on its way to Norfolk, Virginia, for the Navy Yard. Now, what Admiral Arleigh Burke, told Colonel Philip Corso was that something else happened. They were observing the Eldridge on radar.
Uh-huh.
And for the moment that the Eldridge became completely enveloped in the current from these two coils, it disappeared. It winked out from the radar.
from the radar.
And that's what happened. It disappeared.
But the people on the ship, what happened to them?
Well, the sailors, two sailors were melted into the deck. They died.
So you don't believe Bielik, Al Bielik's story, who said that ship was transported into the future?
No.
You do not?
No, I don't. I don't think it happened. I think the Eldridge disappeared from radar, and that's when they said that the ship disappeared in time.
I see. So where does this guy Hoover come in as far as his analysis of that and the UFOs? How do you connect that to the UFO?
Well, Hoover, after he was asked by the Office of Naval Intelligence to investigate the USS Eldridge, mm-hmm. Hoover became fascinated by time travel. Why would all these people, and he realized that the scientist who came up with the equipment that the Navy used was Nikola Tesla.
And he began
researching Nikola Tesla, and Tesla's claims of getting radio waves from the planet Jupiter.
Uh-huh.
So now he was fascinated. So he began investigating inside the Navy, and that's when he found out that the Navy knew of our government's dealing with UFOs.
I see. So was there something to do, though? It's strange that, you know, he would get fascinated with time travel after the Philadelphia experiment. I mean, there must be some sort of connection, right?
Because he knew after the experiment that Carl Allen, who was a crew member on the Eldridge, had told Ray Bradbury, the science fiction writer,
uh-huh.
that the ship had disappeared in time. And that's what the Office of Naval Intelligence had asked George Hoover to investigate, whether the ship traveled in time.
I see. But you're saying it probably did not.
I'm saying it probably did not. That was a fiction created by Carl Allen and Ray Bradbury.
All right. I get it. Now, before we get to Roswell, I do want to ask you a little bit more about Jacques Vallée, because he really came out as a pro-UFO, like the phenomenon was real, and then he sort of retracted that. And you know, what happened? What's Vallée's development, and why did he sort of
there were two issues, really. Vallée originally thought we were dealing with extraterrestrial craft.
Uh-huh.
Then he began to think, well, maybe they're really not extraterrestrial. Maybe they are interdimensional craft, but somehow space and time at the level of pure singularity, at the level of the Einstein intersection of matter and energy, that they were somehow a multi-universe, and there were life forms, entities, that could traverse the different planes of this multiverse, and that's where he thinks these UFOs came from.
And still does, right? He's still around talking about
He still thinks that, yes.
Have you talked to him personally?
No, not in a long time.
I see. Because, so I do think that the UFO is not completely of this dimension. They seem to pop in and out, at least the way they travel. I mean,
he's saying. These are interdimensional. These are not simply space travelers, because you can't really travel in space at the speed they would have to travel and stay
in one dimension. Well, they could, as even I talked to Hal Puthoff, he's investigating the zero-point energy. He says if you get enough energy, you can open up wormholes in space and zip in and out of this dimension. So they can possibly partial of this dimension and part of another dimension. I mean,
That's right. That's what he said about zero-point energy, that using, being able to use the dark energy,
yeah,
this prevalent form of energy in the universe, that these craft could actually navigate between dimensions, be partly in one, partly in the other. Right.
Well, it seems that the universe is teeming with life. There's that book by James Gardner called Biocosm, and there's other theories of anthropic theory of the universe, how the universe is geared towards building life, not what the hardcore Darwinians say, that it, a life is an accident here, that it's a freak of nature. It seems that life itself is part of the phenomena of the universe. I mean, wouldn't you agree there?
Yes, I would. I would very much say that. And that the whole point is, I believe in intelligent design. Now,
yes.
The problem is, what do you mean by intelligent design? Do you mean by intelligent design what the fundamentalists say? Or do you believe by intelligent design what a lot of the mathematicians say about what it takes to create life? My feeling is it doesn't matter.
Right. I mean,
intelligent design is intelligent design.
Well, I think the difference between what the fundamentalists believe is that, there's a God that sets up and decides, but the intelligent design I think you're talking about includes a science and basic laws of the universe that govern natural phenomena. There is a science to consciousness.
Yeah, but I'm also saying that even Einstein said you couldn't get this without a divinity.
Now, when you say divinity,
this wouldn't happen without a divinity.
But many people are now substituting the word consciousness for God, let's say. So,
right, exactly. People are substituting that, and then you wonder, is a unified cosmic consciousness, is that just another way of saying the same thing?
Well, it seems like the universe is, well, if you look at it from a fourth dimensional aspect, then it seems that consciousness is a non-local phenomena, which is fourth dimensional. They're saying the fourth dimension is something that, some people call it time, but other people say if you were living in the fourth dimension, you would be non-local in the third dimension. The way... You know what I'm saying? The way if you were looking down at a flatland, at a two-dimensional city, then if you were a third-dimensional person looking at a two-dimensional life being, you would seem non-local to that being. Does that make
sense?
That's
right. But if you were a three-dimensional entity penetrating a two-dimensional world, all the two-dimensional world could see would be your two dimensions. They would know it's three-dimensional.
So if consciousness is a fourth-dimensional aspect of looking down on us as beings locked in three dimensions, consciousness itself takes on the appearance of non-local reality.
That's right. That's right. Consciousness becomes a form of non-locality because when our intentionality turns a wave to a particle or a particle to a wave, the twins, the duplicates of those particles are also turned from particle to wave.
Right, that's the double, right. And that's because of this thing, entanglement. Once two particles are entangled, they're forever connected.
That's correct. Once particle, yes, that's the formula.
Right,
but
before that, if you talk about the point of singularity where the universe came from, a point of singularity, it seems like all particles were entangled from the beginning anyway.
And that's a very good point, Alan, because there is a physicist called Alan Bohm, who talks about the explicate order of the universe. And
Bohm, yes. What does he mean by that?
The explicate order, and the explicate order of the universe is theoretically, he says, what enables remote viewers like an Ingo Swann, like Hal Puthoff, all the other Army remote viewers, that's what enables them to go to their remote viewing targets from the coordinates that they're given by the taskers.
Right, right. I get. So let me ask you another question. I really wanted to ask someone who's, you've been in this field for 30 years? How long you've been in the UFO field?
About 30 years.
Yeah, you have. You see, I'm talking to Bill Burns. He is the founder of UFO Magazine, which is the major UFO publication in this country and probably around the world. What I want to ask someone who's really investigated this is that, okay, let's say the universe is teeming with life, right? Which,
right.
It seems like it is. Now, does Earth here, our little planet, is that a special place in the universe? Or, I mean, is that the reason these beings are coming?
I have spoken to a lot of people. And I've spoken to people who really claim to know who the movers and shakers are in the UFO reverse engineering field.
Uh-huh.
And one of these people said to me that there is a kind of a federation of civilizations.
Right.
And we, Earth, are on the periphery. And he said, if you think about New York City in the 1890s.
Yeah.
Earth would be Deadwood.
Like a little backward country.
Like a primitive warring country. We're Deadwood up in Dakota. Remember
and
the Black Hills of Dakota?
We're all pretty primitive.
Yeah, that was Deadwood where Robert Hickok was shot to death.
Right, so we're a primitive culture, and we've probably been isolated from the rest of the galactic family because we can't get our own act together. Is that what they're saying?
That's right. We are the raw west of the galactic Pecos.
Right. It sounds like such. I mean, the way when you say that, in a way, it sounds like such science fiction, but. You know, I would think it's but the fact that, you know, I know the government's hiding from us. I know that it's true. But, you know, and I know that we have to get over our barbaric, warlike nature. It is just not in the evolutionary plan. I mean.
Right. Well, that's part of what's going on. We are too violent a species, too violent a race. Of human beings, and we've got a long way to grow.
I mean, do you think 2012 represents a kind of deadline for us as a species, as a planetary race?
No, I think more to the point, what 2012 marks is a recycle of time. At 2012, as you know,
yeah,
Earth and the solar system crosses the galactic plane. So right now we're in a period of intense solar system warming, right? Mars
right.
is getting hotter. Earth is getting hotter. Venus is getting hotter. Mercury is getting hotter. It's
on
top of
the sun. The sun is getting hotter.
And Jupiter is getting hotter, too. So what I'm saying is we are crossing the galactic plane in 2012. That's it. Now, that's a restart of time for the ancient Mayans.
Now, what is crossing the galactic plane? How does that affect consciousness itself? How do you? Because I do believe
that's
astrology.
A good question. Well, that's a very, very good question. Because
crossing the galactic plane has an effect.
Yeah, let's just say that somehow in this very, very complex field of torsion field physics, right?
Uh-huh.
You know what that is? That's the spinning of the spinning of the spinning of all these planets.
Right.
Has a torsion effect.
Uh-huh.
And somehow that torsion effect of all these planets spinning around, that torsion effect somehow affects not just the tides and the way the flowers grow, but it also affects how human beings are able to project your consciousness.
Why, do you know Nassim Haram? He talks all about
there's an actual physicality to it, if you want to know the truth.
Yeah.
I think that we are still biological entities at the end of the day, and there
right.
and there is a physicality to this. I mean, there's no question to that physicality.
Right. So the torsion effect, as we come into this alignment, though, has the same effect on the fluids of the brain, the perceptions. It's just maybe not distorting, but it's creating another level of reality that's becoming apparent to us.
Yes, that's right.
So, but and we don't know really what it's going to look like.
No, we don't, and we don't know what it's going to look like. Remember, we're crossing a plane. What's going to happen on the other side of that plane?
Yeah.
Are all things going to get reversed? We don't know. I mean,
well,
it sounds funny to say that,
plane,
but we just don't know.
Right. Well, it's awfully strange that the universe, or the galaxy, the solar system is pretty flat, that all the planets revolve pretty much, except Pluto, in a disc-like fashion, that the galaxy itself is rather disc-like. I mean, isn't that odd, considering all of the dimensions of space?
Well, it's all we're seeing, though, Alan. That's the point. This goes back to what you said about flatland and sphereland.
Yeah.
We only see through our dimensional prism.
Right.
So
right.
Maybe
actually,
there's
we're
more
only
to the whole universe that we just don't see.
Actually, I we're only actually seeing 5% of what is really there. The rest is, you know, dark matter and dark energy.
That's right. That's exactly
so
the point. I
describe that understanding as if you're in a bathtub, or you're standing above the bathtub, and things are going down the drain, and all we're looking at is the surface bubbles on the bath. You follow me?
Right.
And the
yeah,
rest
we're looking
of the,
through. Yeah, you're looking through one part of that drain. What's
we're looking
on the other
through
side
just,
of that drain.
We're just, right, we're just looking at the surface of that bath. We're not seeing the depth of what's below that.
Exactly. That's the point, that you're only seeing through the dimensional prism that you have. You're not seeing through the whole thing.
Right. And actually, our consciousness is only aware of 5% of what it's actually taking in. So in a sense, we have no idea what reality is really about, do we?
No, we really don't, because we don't see. I mean, you see the black hole, but what's on the other side of the black hole? What if there's a whole universe on the other side? You don't know that.
I believe that, too. I do think if you were to go through a black hole, and Neil deGrasse Tyson, I just wrote a book called Death by Black Hole. Do you know him from the planetarium?
Yes.
He's someone you should definitely interview for your magazine, or maybe I'll interview him for you. But I'm not sure what he's saying, but I do believe that if you went through a black hole, you would arrive and you would either arrive at a sun, you know, because maybe suns are the outpouring of black holes through another dimensional space.
Well, this is the theory. Now, this is the theory, because in this theory, remember, Stephen Hawking said, the whole premise of Bohm's explicate order and the whole premise of remote viewing, which has been proven to be a fact now, we know that now, it's not fiction, it's fact.
I totally believe it, I've done it, I've proven it to myself.
Okay, now, the whole premise of remote viewing is it only works because everything that is, was, and will be are part of the explicate order. There is no past, present, and future. They all exist. Now, this was a direct contradiction of what Hawking said about black holes. He said matter is destroyed in a black hole.
Uh-huh.
And there's a direct contradiction. So on a practical level, we're remote viewing. On another level, of course, we're not. Now, the problem is that these are fireworks going off in Manhattan. Now the problem is that when Hawking finally revised his theory and said no, no, matter is not destroyed. You can emerge from the other side of a black hole, maybe in not the same shape, but you can emerge from the other side of the black hole. When he said that, that brought his theory of black holes into conformity with Einstein and with the practicality of remote viewing.
In what way did it bring together the practical, the fact that all time is happening at once?
That's right.
That, and that
matter
time
is not destroyed. That the future exists now.
Because of the gravitational force of a black hole rips time and space to shreds, actually time itself?
That's what Hawking said, and then he revised his theory to say, no, he does, no, it doesn't.
So where does that then all leave us now? What's Hawking, who is the major authority? How is he opening up to a more divine understanding of consciousness in the evolution of the universe?
Well, that's why Hawking wants to travel into space, because he's saying his consciousness will expand once he enters orbital space.
So I don't know. Some people say he's the closest thing to a disembodied consciousness, you know?
Right. But he's saying he needs to travel into space. That's what he's saying.
Well, that's pretty amazing. Wow. So, Bill, I didn't realize you were such an amazing philosopher and spiritual being as well. Because a lot of UFO investigators just get into the really hardcore facts and they steer away from the understanding of consciousness. But I think if we're really going to understand what's going on, consciousness is a major key in the UFO phenomena.
I agree. I totally agree.
So maybe on some upcoming shows we can talk about what happened at Roswell, but where do you think the future of your UFO investigation, UFOs investigations in general, where are we going with it?
We're connecting the dots.
What does it look like?
That Roswell really happened. And
yes.
If Roswell really happened, if indeed what Walter Hout said in his affidavit is true, that means there's no argument anymore about Roswell. And if there's no argument anymore about Roswell, then we are, in fact, visited by an extra or by a non-terrestrial culture. We've
right.
been now visited. We're a part of that universe. That means we have the evidence. We're dealing with extraterrestrials. And that means that at least part of our government, part of our planet, is so dealing. And that means that at some point that truth will come out.
Of course it will. And why do you think it hasn't come out yet? I mean, what is the problem? I mean, because of course it would change everything we know about everything, right?
No way, because the government, what's in it for the government to disclose? When the government has a reason to disclose, when they can get something by disclosure, then there'll be a rationale for disclosure. But I think disclosure is going to happen without the government. I think it's going to happen on its own. I think it's already happened. When people say,
well, it is already happened. It's all over the
my
internet.
Is
that affidavit.
Why don't
I mean,
we have disclosure? Because we already have
everywhere.
But that's why.
Why would the government want to disclose it? What kind of situation would make them want to disclose?
Well, let's just say that they have to come up with an explanation for why certain things are happening. That would be a reason for disclosure. But my thought is, look, the government treats us like children. Things happen before our very, very eyes, and the government just, you know, they deny it, right? Well, the
right.
fact is at some point, somebody's just not going to deny it anymore. So it's not going to be as though there's going to be disclosure. They're just not going to deny it. When they stop denying it, then there will have been some kind of a new, will be in a new paradigm. But for the time being, you don't need disclosure because we already know it's happening.
But doesn't it make the government look really bad? I mean, the Air Force issued that Roswell case closed book. They said absolutely no proof that there were UFOs.
They were dumber. Yes.
I mean, if they come out now and say, you know what, we were lying, I mean, then you can trace it back to, like, well, they were lying about the Iraqi war, they were lying about Vietnam. I mean, what was Vietnam about anyway? No one even knows what it was about.
They don't care. You have to realize that the government actually doesn't, they don't care.
They don't care about people.
They don't care about the truth. They get paid. They're not worried. They're getting paid. They don't care. I mean, it's not as though there's some monolithic thing. They just don't care.
But aren't we the government? Or actually, is that still some kind of fantasy that Americans have that we are actually
we're not the
government?
We hire the government.
Well, but we hire
so
them. They're working for us. But that is
but it's changed so much. It's expanded so much that it's really lost touch with the very people they represent.
Right, right. And especially who's in the White House now, they are, I think Cheney said, I don't care if America doesn't want a war in Iraq. He just doesn't care, you know. He's doing
right.
it because he has an agenda.
The government follows its own agenda. They don't care. Right now, the fact is, they don't need to disclose anything. And they're not.
Right, right. So let's just, as we close here, just like if people, okay, let's say it came out, there are UFOs here, we are part of a greater civilization. How does the world look then? What does it look like to you once it's an accepted fact that we are part of something bigger here? What does that look like?
Well, once that happens, suddenly a lot of different pieces fall into shape. What happened
like?
At Roswell? What happened at Kingman, Arizona?
What does the world itself actually look like to you once this stuff comes out as an accepted fact?
Much like Europe was in the 1600s. Let's go there. Let them come here. Let's see what they've got. Really, I see it as an analogy to the discovery of the New World in the 15th and 16th centuries.
Right. So it's I do think if they are here and we do open up that, I think it'll be an acceleration in science, in medicine, in healing. I think so much gets revealed once things come forward.
Yeah.
A whole new technology that becomes available.
That's right.
I mean,
I agree
if we
with
can
you.
Really
that will
make
happen.
Peace with ourselves and with the extraterrestrials, I think we only have to gain from that. I'm not worried about them taking over and invading. I think those are paranoid delusions of people who are afraid of the unknown.
Well, you've got people who say this already happened, that they have taken over, and we really, the reason there's no disclosure is they'd rather have us working for them, and there are people who say there are different groups warring.
But do you think the aliens have taken over and are in control of the government?
I tend to suspect that there's more alien presence here than people realize. Yes, I do. I'm of that school.
I've been told
people who claim to be working for the aliens, so there you are.
Right, but don't you think ultimately the aliens are a positive force? Of course, they're like people, they're good and bad, but I mean, my opinion is that they're ultimately higher, more enlightened beings.
Let's just say that the people who've explained the alien presence to me have said, and I suspect at least more than one of them are actually aliens themselves, they basically said, look, you know, the aliens are here. They've been here for thousands of years. They've guided this planet. They've guided humanity. And I would, you know, I mean, it's not relevant about disclosure.
Right.
To them, that's
not
a relevant argument.
But anyway, I think... But I do think within the next 5 to 10 years, this will be more public knowledge as opposed to the people have just
it
really.
It will be more public knowledge, and I just wonder if the next phase is going to be who's the alien.
And what do you mean by that?
Are you an alien?
I probably am.
Is he an alien? I think that's going to be the next phase.
And then what? A kind of prejudice against that?
Well, I don't know. I just don't know. That may be something, too. They don't want to divide humanity into various classes. Who's the ET? Who's the human?
Well, I think I've had some experiences, and I think it runs in my family, and I think most of the people at that conference have had experiences, and we're sort of seeing the new world first, maybe. But
maybe you are, and maybe you're the fortunate ones.
Well, or not, or I don't know. You know, we're definitely the ones that have had some other types of openings, and I mean, I feel like I can contemplate reality in a different way because of whatever experience. I'm not buying the accepted fact of what I've been told reality is because of my experiences.
Right.
You know?
And that's a good thing.
But, okay, Bill, thank you. I've been talking
thank
to
you. Thank you very much for the time, and have a nice weekend. And thanks, Alan. I look forward to seeing you again.
Yeah, definitely. I'll be in touch with you. I'll call you. I'll send you some articles.
Okay, thank you, Alan.
Okay,
thanks,
Bill, for being a guest. I've been talking to Bill Burns, the founder and publisher of UFO Magazine. And I'm just finishing up here. This has been New Realities with Alan Steinfeld. And I'm on every week at this time, 6:30 p.m. West Coast time, 9:30 East Coast, 9:30 p.m. East Coast time, Sunday night. You can also email me at newrealities@earthlink.net. You can look at my website, newrealities.tv or newrealitiestv.com. I welcome comments and questions and ideas and any sort of controversial topics along these lines. I'm going to end with this song. It was written by an abductee, Duke Williams. It's Duke has been a guest on my show. It is Duke Williams and the Extremes. It is The Night Before the Future. Let me just find that song. Thank you for listening, and here we go with The Night Before the Future. And here we go.
Take it away, or did you think you better off staying in bed and not doing a thing but relaxing your head? Just remember, the things you see might not quite be your own reality. The dimensions exist within you, the inner, and then who knows, you're just a beginner. Because life is start, and when it ends, it turns around and told me that
Seinfeld for New Realities. Thank you for listening, and I'll hear from you, see you, be with you next week. Thank you.
Hello. This is Wesley Snipes. And when I want to get tuned in, tuned up, and not tuned out, I listen to Dr. Fred Bell, Health and Sciences Show on BBSRadio.com. Mary had a little lamb, Mary had a little lamb, and went off to the Pleiades. Woo!
Hi, this is independent producer-composer Nelson Ortez. Looking to get away from the same old stuff you hear every day? To get a fresh new sound? DBS Radio is where it's at. If it's not mainstream, it's on DBSRadio.com.
Blending the practical and the mystical, The Emmy Louie Show, with host and one of the feng shui architecture's leading experts, Emmy Louie is an honest, fun, and entertaining look at exciting fields of feng shui, architecture, and even politics. Each week, Emmy and her expert guests, including the biggest names and trendsetters in these industries and cutting-edge experts in green and sustainable practices, offer advice on how to make the best of your home or office, your environment, and your mind, body, and spirit. Tune in to The Emmy Louie Show and get that spark that'll change your life. The Emmy Louie Show. Understand your physical space and activate your energy.
Hi, this is singer-songwriter Kara Johnstad, and you're listening to BBS Radio. If it's not mainstream, it's on BBSRadio.com.
On your cheek in about a week. Come on. Sometimes the people, they read the books in order to get the smarts. But until they unlock the words from their heads, never gonna find their hearts. Sometimes the people, they look at the sky, all they see is clouds. But you know, Mr. Sunshine, he'd be peeping through the cracks if only he was allowed to dig the spaces. You know what I mean? Dig the spaces. Things just ain't what they seem. Some people like the donut, some people like the hole. Some people want your body, and the rest they want your soul. And the atom, it's got these electrons going round the nucleus. It was Mr. Einstein, he taught us in quantum mechanics. He said you gotta dig the spaces. You know what I mean? You gotta dig the spaces. Things just ain't what they seem. Some people's minds are burning, they're looking for a riot. But my mind is like a vacuum, it just wants some peace and quiet. Some people like the words of this song, some people like the rhythm. But if you're looking for the truth, you're gonna find it in between them. Yes, you gotta
in the slant of evening sun, burning through your bedroom window. Look for me in the pictures of noon.
You're listening to BBS Radio. An internet radio experience of truth, harmony, beauty. From your family at BBS Radio, have yourself a beautiful day.
I lost my dream, packed my bags with little things. Two more days, I'm off the plane, the whole world's gone insane. They gave me orders, take this gun, you'll have to shoot this till the day you're done. Fear takes over me, now I'm facing my mortality. Best I can. On this same ground, I'd have to gun him down. Somewhere I lost my soul. They call me hero, so they say. Even though they buried me today, now I'm just another casualty. Yeah, yeah. Best I can. I'll never be the same after seeing someone giving their life. Yeah, something's gotta change before we all die. Never knowing if this is right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
2,000 soldiers killed in the war, yet no end is in sight. Many say the pretense before WMD was simply a ruse by government officials. How many soldiers must die is the question many parents of these brave young men are beginning to ask.
Soldier in the sun, best I can.
Daddy's missing me too.
Liberty, freedom, here is me.
I'm just a soldier in the sand, trying to do the best I can. Gotta protect the promised land. Please, you gotta understand. Stop the war and poverty. The only freedom here is me. Can't believe the things I see. God, the war is killing me.
Thank you. Well, there's a place beneath the western skyline where angels wander wounded, and there's a price all of them have paid. Never to fly 1 minute elsewhere, and the ground grows hard wherever they have fallen, and the chains they wear are heavy, and when they smile it's only for a moment, and they never say their name out loud. They trade flight just to hear the words, hello angel. Sometimes late, just before the sun sets, in the hour of the magic light, if you're still and very, very quiet, they will gather and begin to sing, and when they sing, you will be moved. It's over, they will not remember you, 'cause they trade flight just to hear the words, hello angel. They trade flight just to hear the words, hello angel. So save your kisses for the altar, and throw that angel feather in the fire, 'cause once I had enough to make me wings. You see, once I had enough to make me wings. And they trade flight just to hear the words, hello angel. They trade flight just to hear the words, hello angel.
Producer, composer, Nelson Ortez. Looking to get away from the same old stuff you hear every day? To get a fresh new sound? DBS Radio is where it's at. If it's not mainstream, it's on DBSRadio.com.
Hi, everybody out there. This is Xenia Seberg. And who are you? Because I'm there no matter where you are, because this is Dr. Fred Bell's show on BBS Radio.
Health, Science, and Energy show on BBSRadio.com.
We'll make you sound better than you sound right now.
Well, that's a good thing. For me, it's like midnight here. I'm going to bed, which doesn't matter to you guys. Aren't you ready? Stay tuned.
Thank you. sit in your fancy offices and say, has anybody ever proved me wrong? But that is the tragic part of it. You don't really know what's going on. But I got some news for you. You're mine. Sorry, my friend. You're mine.
BBSRadio.com. Don't forget to tune in to The Infinite Consciousness with Eva Herr every Sunday at 7 p.m. Pacific Time. Enjoy.
Would you like to know the real secret? I'm not talking about the new movie or book. I'm talking about you. You are the biggest secret in your life. Your secret could unlock your highest potential and fulfill all your dreams. What is that secret? The knowledge of who you are. This is Robert Lee Camp, author of The Cards of Your Destiny and Love Cards. I am the host of a new show here on BBSRadio.com called Mr. Destiny. You can listen in or join in any Monday night at 7:30 Pacific or 10:30 Eastern on the late night section. Come on the show, tell me your birthday, and I will reveal some of your secrets. Maybe ones that can open up the doors for new possibilities for you and your life. Your birthday is the key to your destiny. I invite you to come explore your destiny with me and find out what the Book of Destiny has to say about you. Hope to see you then.
April, come here a second. Look over across the street. Is he using electric lawnmower or is he using gasoline lawnmower?
Electric.